X13, the 8 ordered steps to finding our oneness with being. Number 1A.
Now, we have been considering all during this week, so to say, the way of understanding, right from the atomistic point of view, up to the comprehensivist point of view, or the point of view of oneness of consciousness. And so we arrived at its climax. Now, what else could I say now? The thing is always that we have to consider the letter and the spirit. And as long as one presents just the science of being in its developing sense from one stage to the other, it is quite clear that the student first gets the letter sense of it. But we know that the letter must be wedded to the spirit, that both are necessary. It is not so that we only need the spirit. Today we need both the letter and the spirit. Mrs. Eddy's works are full of indications about the import of the letter and of the spirit. And she says quite clearly that the ancient healers may not have had the word, but they may have had the spirit, and that having the spirit did not prevent them to do the healing work. But they couldn't explain it. That was all right at that stage, but Mrs. Eddy came in order to show to each one how to get the spirit. In earlier time it was just a special dispensation to some people that they had a natural sense of spiritual things, and therefore, like the ancient worthy, could have great demonstrations on the basis of the spirit of it. But Mrs. Eddy says that they were looking for a higher dispensation, namely for the science. Even Jesus really never gave us the letter, but he always presented the spirit. He didn't give us the letter in so far as he never showed the science of it. Mrs. Eddy said that she came and knew that in ancient times people would have wonderful demonstrations and brought forth wonders on the basis of uplifting faith, and then says, but I must know the science of it. She could see that in our age, in the age of science, it would be a much greater dispensation to the world if instead of having a few inspired spiritual thinkers and healers, we would find a science which could be taught to everyone who wanted to be taught and who was willing really to learn. So the spirit alone is not enough today. So often we hear, well, there is no use about the letter, all this studying and all this investigation and analysis of the textbook and of the Bible just doesn't do a thing. All that matters is the spirit. All right? All that matters is the spirit. But where do you get it? If one doesn't belong to those very rare people who have it in a natural way, then how should we get it? And Mrs. Eddy says that naturally that those born of a woman, science must be a discovery. And it must be discovered in a systematic, logical way. You know, it is said that Mrs. Eddy asked in one of her class, why did Christian Science get lost? Did it get lost after Jesus' time because of the lack of the letter or because of the lack of the Spirit? And naturally, no, it could be understood that the students answered because of the lack of the Spirit. And she said, no, because of the lack of the letter. Because the letter did go lost, nobody was able to imbibe the letter such that it melted or blended into the Spirit, that it was wedded to the Spirit, that the letter, by pondering the letter and praying about that letter and about the clear letter, the scientific letter, that that would be the way how to evolve the Spirit of that letter. And so she put quite stress on the fact that we should not scorn at the letter, but on the contrary, that what was needed would be the absolute letter, because the absolute letter, when pondered, when we love it, then the letter unfolds and becomes a warm sense of Spirit. To those who know the system of Christian Science, it isn't something abstract. It has not anything of the touch of being academical, but it's something very warm, very living, very joyous, very near to the heart. So I would like to devote an hour or so to the question how this pondering of the letter is leading to the Spirit, how through our cultured analysis of the signs of being, we step by step somehow are led into the one being. Now, you have in front of you a chart or a page called The Ordered Steps of Finding Our Oneness with Being. You see, what I want to show is not something dogmatized in the way of the ascending way to this spiritual sense, but I want to show how in our age, in our evolution, those steps were leading us to the oneness of being. We had taken all this week the presentation up to the oneness of being, and now I would like to show what is the inward pondering attitude which we really need in order to unfold that letter into the Spirit. Actually, this is always a great question in religion. In religion, those two big questions were always that there is a God, and then second, how do we commune with that God? How are we at one with that God? And so religion has proposed rituals, sacrificial offerings, keeping commandments, and so on. All ways and means that were presented to the people adapted to being one with the spiritual being. The mystics have taken other ways and means, especially meditations, asceticism, so that in order to arrive at that point of nirvana where they are immersed into the infinite one. Theology presents us with dogmas of the atonement, with the Last Supper, and so on, whereas Christian Science really appeals to thinking, to understanding, to consciousness, as a way in which we approach the one being and in which we can be inwardly at one with that which is presented as the structure of being. So actually, in a big way, we could say what we have been doing all this week is showing the structure of being, and now somehow we have to see how do we get at one inwardly, spiritually, with that structure of being. And so we must see some ordered steps in which this unfolds. It is therefore, as I have put here on your chart, the ordered steps of finding our oneness with being, which is really nothing else but the resolving of the personal I into the I am. You remember how we left the subject this morning with the I am, the oneness of being, which meant that the personal I am had to give way. Now, we can't just say to the personal I, go away. We can say that, but it doesn't go away. It needs quite a cultured and I would even say a longer development, how we can get rid of one's own self, so that we are unselfed. You see, unselfed is that word which appears on the first sentence of the Christian Science textbook, and which is the key to the whole textbook. Without an unselfed attitude, the whole textbook will never yield its treasures, because we will always then approach the textbook or the Bible with our personal self, with our personal I, and that is duality, and that can never really fathom the depths of the textbook. So, how could we resolve, how could we transform, so to say, the personal I until it yields to that point where only the divine I is present in consciousness? We can see it must be a mental process. It is no more a ritual process. It's no more a dogmatic process. It must have to do with thinking, with consciousness. And so the very first point which we all have to take in order to see anything about the signs of being is this first point, I think, namely to recognize that all is mental. Here it begins. Somebody who thinks that the universe is material, that we have to do with the material universe, or that we have to do with the material and mental universe, will just not get any further. The very first big step is in metaphysics to see that all is mental. Just as we have seen last or this week, how physics today say that the material universe is nothing else but the construction of human consciousness. Therefore brings it right back to mentality. So one of the first points in order to get out of the letter sense into the spirit sense is first to see that all is mental. See, that's something which has been brooding in the world since many, many thousand years. You know already that the Greeks were seeing that knowing is being, that therefore knowing and not material world is being. Parmenides said that already 2,500 years ago. We know that then in the Middle Ages, in the Renaissance, how Descartes came along and said in his well-known Latin expression, cognito ergo sum, as I cognize, I am. mental is being. Mentality is being. I'm only that which I cognize, cognito, only that which I really think, that is being. Or because I think, I am. So that he began to see also that the way to be in touch with reality is through consciousness, through mentality. Shakespeare tried to say and said, there is nothing either good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. He could see that thinking makes his whole experience of the world, and began to see that everything really is mental. And you know, today psychology has come along, then psychosomatic medicine has come along, putting more and more stress on the mental side of being and saying that actually everything depends on mentality. So this is a great step forward. It is a step which every metaphysician will tell, no matter to which school he belongs. Peel would talk about the power of positive thinking and so on, so that we begin to see the very first point is to see that all is mental. The moment we see that all is mental, we turn towards our own thinking and say, all right, then I must see what is happening within my own thoughts. This, I think, brings us to the second step, namely that the mental can be good or evil. That's usually the second discovery which one makes. The moment we have acknowledged or accepted the doctrine or the fact that everything is mental, then usually one begins to ask, but what is a true mentality? What is a good mentality? And then comes the great struggle, really, in one's own mentality. What are good thoughts? What are evil thoughts? We begin to see then at this stage that I have to be careful what I have in my consciousness, that according to the quality of my thought, the effect of it is either positive or negative. If it's good, it's positive. If it's bad, it's negative. It's then constructive or destructive. It is then either benevolent or then it is malevolent. It is then either harmonious or disharmonious or anything like that. So one begins to realize that alone recognizing that all is mental has not yet brought us to the end. That the second step is necessary and ask oneself, what is good mentality? And so we have first to watch our thoughts. And watch that our thoughts are controlled by good thoughts and not evil thoughts. But what is the criterion if our thoughts are good or bad? And up to now we have seen in this development that we do not know what is good and bad. Because if we say, yes, our thoughts must be good, we find the criterion within ourselves, that which I think is good, what my feelings say is good, and therefore I think that way. But that is no true criterion. The human ego, the human education, the human standard, which is perhaps formed and molded by religious belief, by ethical beliefs, by traditional beliefs, is no secure standard what is good and what is evil. So that sentence which says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, means that if he thinks good, he is a good man. If he thinks evil, he is an evil man. But you can see at once that this statement, which appears also in the textbook, is not a very high statement. Because from a higher standpoint, it's just not true. It's only true as long as we are dwelling on that lower level of metaphysics where we see, yes, good thoughts bring about a good man, evil thoughts bring about an evil man. But that man is not yet man. It's not yet idea. And therefore, we have to go and find a higher standard of reference. And therefore, a third stage is coming. I have termed it that leads us really to thinking in terms of ideas. Because only ideas are also humanly good. And so, in thinking in ideas, we know that is always humanly good and not evil. So the very next big step, which we do, and actually which very few metaphysical or practically none of the metaphysical school can do, is to have a real standard of reference, namely ideas, which give us the assurance that if we think in terms of these ideas, in terms of this standard of reference, that then our thinking is actually divinely good. So we come to the third step, where we have to see ideas. Ideas alone are good and real. But in order to find that standard of ideas according to which we should think, we naturally have to study the seven synonymous terms. And so here we begin to see the necessity of asking ourselves, now what are the ideas characterizing being itself? What are the ideas which characterize mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love? And if we find out these ideas without any other classification, we already have a standard of reference and can say, if I think according to these ideas, then I have the assurance that I think positively, that is good, and that the effect of that will be good. So, in my spiritual culture, the letter begins to touch the spirit, namely, I have got that clear-cut letter of what ideas are, and I have now to align my thoughts to ideas, and that's already a touch of the spirit that comes in, because ideas are spiritual, they are no more the letter. And so, in the measure I begin to culture within myself and say, I am going to identify my thoughts with ideas. Can you still hear? Thoughts, ideas. Thoughts, ideas. Identify my thoughts with ideas. That's why we are still in the metaphysical realm. In that measure, my thought becomes spiritualized, because ideas are spiritual and are no more a letter. Because ideas are the ideas of God's Spirit, in that small measure I begin to spiritualize my thoughts. That's what is called spiritualization of thought. And we can see that this is now based on a reliable, definite basis, because we know now that ideas are good. And we know these ideas, and so we know that as a man thinketh in his heart, if he thinketh in his heart according to ideas, then he is just a calculus of ideas. And this naturally slowly brings us out of the mental and the human element into seeing that all that matters is ideas, the blending of ideas, therefore the functional sense of ideas, and this gives me quite a new sense, that which is spiritual. Now, when we have done that, we shouldn't be satisfied with it, because we still feel that we are thinking in terms of infinite ideas. But as we have seen, ideas can be classified together to a tone. And we remember how we said that all the ideas of mind can have a super symbol, can be classified in the tone of mind, into the synonym. And so at that point, we begin to feel the further unfoldment into the spiritual, into the infinite, namely that now we begin to think, here is the fourth point, thinking in terms of the synonyms for God. This is a much broader, much wider, much more warmer sense than thinking in terms of idea. Here now we can see that we are thinking just in terms of mind. And so our spiritualization of thought, I still speak about thought, our spiritualization of thought will therefore consist in taking those quiet moments and sitting back and just culture our thought by filling them with the tone of the synonymous terms. You can do that, as I said before this week, you just sit back and you say, now, what is mind? So, and you fill your thought with the ideas of mind. That's the third step. You fill your thought with ideas and you go through the ideas of mind as law, as creator, as the origin, as the source, as the law, as the intelligence, as the knowing and the all-perceiving and all-comprehending and all-surveying, as that which foresees and foretells, that which can overlook the future, that which is power, which is force, which is the creator, which is the producer, which is the impulsion of life, which is the will of life, which is the all of mind. Can you see, you go through these ideas and you just ponder them, and as we ponder them, slowly, slowly we just feel, oh, all is mind. And you have a sense of the infinitude of mind. And so is spirit. And so, in a sense, we get free from the individual concepts of the ideas, and what takes place within consciousness is just that we think in tones of mind. And then we are no more dependent on those terms which characterize the ideas. Then we can take any writing or any experience in life without having letters there, without having the letters of those ideas there, we can say, this is a motion of mind, or this is a motion of spirit, or of life, or of love. We read in nature, we read in experience, we read in what's happening in the world, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. And naturally in this way you can see how we free ourselves from the letter sense of things and just get the spiritual tone of the synonymous term. So at that point, we do not identify ourselves just with ideas, as in the third step, but in the fourth step, we identify ourselves really with the synonymous term. I am one with mind. And so I begin to see that closer relationship, that closer, bigger relationship and unity, namely the unity with the seven synonymous terms. And so I just see first, I am one with mind. I am one with spirit. And so my thought dwells in that sense of being one with mind, with spirit, with soul, and so on.